as a marketing agency, we are often brought in when the numbers are down or flat to down. And, you know, oftentimes the initial thinking is we just need to do more. Oftentimes doing more of what is not yet, you know, pulling your attractive character, your ideal customer to your website. It's not converting them through it. Doing more of that is likely to be just as not profitable as what you're doing now.
A sinking ship can only take so much water before it needs a repair. The same goes for marketing strategies when they spring a leak. When marketing goes sideways, how can you turn the tide before your ship sinks? In this episode, we talk to Lean Labs Head of Growth, Kevin Barber, about the comebacks he's seen and cover crisis management tactics you can use to right the ship.
Are you a startup founder or CMO trying to grow your brand? There's good news. You're not the first. Our growth team is committed to learning and earning the skills and strategies high growth companies have used to build their businesses. And now we're sharing them with you. Welcome to Growth Team Radio.
Welcome to Growth Team Radio. I am your host, Mallory Kuhn, and I am joined today by Kevin Barber, Head of Growth at Lean Labs. Hi there, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Mallory?
Excellent. I am doing well. Today, I'm very excited to chat about our topic today. We're talking about marketing turnarounds, right? Kind of those inspiring cases where everything might be going wrong and we still manage to pull out the win. So let's kick things off, as we often do with our guests here, including our illustrious guest today, Kevin. Let's do an introduction. So we're going to be talking through a few case studies. But before we get into it, what's your experience?
Yeah, so here's the deal. As a marketing agency, we are often brought in when the numbers are down or flat to down. And, you know, oftentimes the initial thinking is we just need to do more. We just need to do more of what we've been doing. And if we just do more, then we will turn it around. And the reason why I'm excited about this episode is because oftentimes doing more of what is not yet, you know, pulling your attractive character, your ideal customer to your website. It's not converting them through it. Doing more of that is likely to be just as not profitable as what you're doing now. So this episode is important because oftentimes it's not about doing more of what's not working, but starting to embrace the fact that there's something broken. We have to find it. We have to fix it. So it's not more content. It's not cheaper content. It's not more expensive content. It's not a prettier website. It's starting to think about how do we figure out what's fundamentally holding us back from having that ease of customer acquisition that we might have had in a previous time or in a different place?
So let's talk through some examples. I think that's the best way to kind of get into this and dive into the meat. Let's just dive straight in here. Because you have a wealth of experience. For anyone that's listened to previous episodes that you've been on, they know you've been in the game with a variety of different clients, verticals, all those kinds of things for several years now. So I'm sure you have no shortage of examples, which is why I wanted to bring you on this episode. Let's start with a first example of a case study where you saw or helped facilitate a marketing turnaround. Can you briefly describe the company in an example to start?
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is here's how I actually got into marketing. So when I first got into marketing, I was actually just quite dismayed with the marketing and the just everything that this boat manufacturer was doing, that my father-in-law actually owned their boat. And I was interested in their boat. And I was like, but like, they almost make me not able to buy it because of the way they're marketing it. So one of the things that I did, just as a I'm kind of into boats, is I actually just printed out their website and I showed all the things that I thought as a boat person. And my father-in-law, who had owned more than one of their boats, was thinking about the way they positioned and marketed the brand just as a buyer, right? And then I put that into a priority envelope and I sent it to them. And then they called me and they were like, you seem to understand what's going on in our in our company, like what's going on. And the fact is that most of the time when your marketing is not working is because it's just not connecting with the people you're trying to get with. And you might be particularly fond of it, right? Because you spent a huge amount of time developing your product, developing your software, developing your service, but it's just not landing with the market. And in their case, what was happening is they were trying to sell through dealers, fundamentally wasn't working. No one could understand the difference between them and their competitors that were bigger brands with more funded, with more volume, more appearance in the marketplace, showing up the events, you know, being in the races. And what was happening is this brand just didn't stand out. So what we did is we stopped and we talked to about 30 customers. We talked to about 30 customers that bought and about 10 that didn't. And you know what? At first, it seemed a little bit random. Everyone's different situations and their buying criteria until we got a little deeper in. Once you cross 10, 15, 20, they start to rhyme. They start to fall into one or two or three categories. And you're like, oh, wow, this is what the market wants to see and needs to hear in order to understand where we're different, right? And we did that work. And that always is the step that everyone wants to skip. But it's actually where the gold is. Right. So inside of this company, what we decided to do was strategically reposition them. Like the dealer network was not working. So they took a pretty big gamble and they were like, we're going to shut it down. But before we do, we have to prove this out. So we launched a factory direct model. We launched factory direct custom boats. And you could pick your hull, you pick your power, you pick your interiors. And this was already the case, but once it had sat at the dealer, it just was like any other boat, but they could always have done it custom. They leaned into that, showed how you could get the ideal boat built in the way that you want in just 3 or 4 weeks, which the time delay was the biggest concern. And the fact is that not only did it hit with the market, but it actually was newsworthy. So now they started to show up in Powerboat Magazine of like breaking the trend and changing the model, right? It was in Powerboat Magazine. It was in Hot Boat Magazine. It was in articles. Like they actually got free publicity in local media around, you know, what's happening because, you know, this was a definite buck of the trend, right? And like when things are not going well, you can lean into one, what you stand for and what you do well, but you can also lean into what you stand against, right? And for them, the dealer network model simply was not working. So they took a stand and they're like, we're gonna try to break that model and show why it's not working for us and why we think it doesn't work for buyers. And here's the deal. They had only sold one boat the previous 2 years through their dealers. Like that's how bad it was. And they sold some, you know, models to customers coming back, upgrading, etc. But through dealers, that's all they had sold. So it wasn't too hard to shut it down. We launched this positioning at the end of season, just put it out to their list, sold 3 boats end of season, which is kind of hard. And then sold 6 the next year, 12 the next year, 26 the next year. It's funny just how it doubled. And then they sold the company, right? And that was all around having a narrative that was worthy of marketing that broke through the noise. Was that all me? No, that was a lot of customer development, listening to the marketplace, that was talking to the dealers to see what they were frustrated about, talking to the owners, talking to the customers, and coming to understand, because at the end of the day, it's about message market match. You have to understand what's happening in the minds of the buyers, and put messaging in front of it. And that was my first significant project. And of course, I thought they were all going to go like that, right? Every project afterwards would just be just as awesome. Where every year we double it. It's 100% through marketing and it's completely profitable.
No.
But the fact is that, you know, I took on a lot of other projects where I actually drifted back into that, oh, well, we just need more content, or oh, we just need a prettier website. And we didn't actually think of that really nailing that positioning. So if you're finding yourself in a struggle, sometimes it's good to go ahead and bite that bullet. You know, you can talk. I talked to, what was it? It was 14 of my clients' customers, and I did it in a day, right? I did it in seven hours. I did it in 30-minute increments, had an hour break for lunch, so it took me eight, right? It's just not that hard. I think that sometimes we have to embrace doing that thing that doesn't scale so that we can get the lessons and insights that allow us to.
Yeah. I'm curious, how, well, I know you were saying, you know, year over year, it's 100%, you know, growth every time. What was the timeline from the moment when you sent that envelope full of, you know, your marked up printout of their website to that moment when you guys sold those three boats in the beginning of the off season?
Yeah, so I think I sent that to them early in the season, like April, May, because we're literally down at the lake house and just like had gone to some boat shows. We're just like, man, this company needs to get it together. And we were talking in late May as the season started. Started talking to customers. You know, easy time to talk to customers. Start of the season. So June and July is when we were working a lot of work, changing messaging, thinking about what does Factory Direct even mean, coming up with the seven levels of custom power boats that we then marketed, thinking about power and control, colors and options, and, you know, the different things that people would care about. And we rolled that out in late August. And of course, after roughly the first week of September, it's off season. So it was quite late in the year, but still, the time to learn is as soon as possible. We could have easily delayed it, but we actually were able to sell several boats through this new option by rolling it out when it looked like maybe it was too late.
Yeah, that's a great example. I mean, and it's quite a fast turnaround too, if you consider, you know, from May until August, that's like a quarter and a half. That's incredible.
Yeah, and like I said, I thought that every story would go like that, but that's just the power of having this positioning where people stop and take notice. And if you don't have a positioning that makes people go stop and go, what? That's interesting. Then most likely marketing is difficult for you right now.
Yeah. Well, let's talk through another example and see if we can find something that maybe was a little more challenging or maybe just, you know, had a bit of a different journey. Through this process of, you know, turning around their efforts, what other kernels of wisdom do you have for us here?
So my second big example was about 3 years after that, and what happened was there was a brand that actually was who we rarely work with today, but they were a brick and mortar retail store, and they were selling motorcycle apparel. Right. And they were doing about a little bit over half of their business online, and they were doing, you know, a little bit less than half of their business in the store. Right. Naturally. And the deal is that the goal was to explode the online business, because like who wants to have 30 or 40 or 50 stores? Like that sounds like a headache. Right. But like if we can have our virtual store, obviously we're going to try to blow this up. And the fact is in order to do that, you have to have something newsworthy, something interesting. You know, you can't just have the same thing that everyone else has available. So in this instance, the brand was, you know, doing less than $1 million total and a little bit less than, you know, $500,000 in online sales, but they weren't starting from scratch. The problem was, is their attempts to drive it forward, it wasn't looking to where the cost of customer acquisition and the average cart value were working very well. Does that make sense? So basically the cost through pay-per-click and other advertising wasn't paying off. So what we did is we just leaned into one of the niches. And as a niche they knew they had, but we just went, which was they were buying closeouts. They were buying the stuff that went off of current model. They were buying it and then selling it at a discount, right? Buying it at a discount, selling it at a discount. But they decided to lean into it. We decided to lean into it and make everything around the closeouts. And you could still navigate to new items, but instead we just made it entirely about it and decided that we would be the king of closeouts. And the thing that we did is like closeouts have a really interesting opportunity because they have levers that people care about, which is scarcity. So when the closeout is gone, it's gone, right? Obviously, they're getting it in a bit of a deal because we're buying it at a deal. The margins are actually way better, right? But through a scarcity of stock, you know, scarcity of size, scarcity of color, and short term of price, we launched this concept called the insanity deal, right? And what we did is I had actually worked at a large retail store, and I watched how they did their price. They did rolling price changes. So if something was on sale every week, it was fairly programmatic, right? This is on sale, and then this is on the sale, this is on sale. And even the sale price was a decent deal. And I'm like, we could do that with closeouts, right? This was a very large Warren Buffett-owned company that I was modeling. I'm like, let's just apply that, right? And we did these insanity deals where we took a certain amount of stock and quantity with a time frame and the amount that we were going to sell at a certain price, and we rolled it out every week. It's really interesting. Within one year, insanity deals, one page of the website, what we were promoting that week became 50% of the business. And it's like, so when people are interested in closeouts, they're really interested in the FOMO of getting a deal. What's interesting is these insanity deals were quite a bit higher margin than new apparel. So this is not a cost-cutting measure. It's a positioning measure. So if there's a second component of the turnaround, it's like, okay, we got to think about how we're positioning ourselves to be unique, standing out. And then the FOMO is real. And then we just gave people great terms for, you know, yeah, you're ordering it online, so try it on, make sure it fits. And if not, for any reason, we make that easy. And of course, this is not the newest story, but this was the second experience I had. By leaning into it, that business went from, was it a little under 500 to about 900 to like 1.7, and they ultimately get to 5 million in 5 years. It was like 4.9. I'm rounded up. But anyways, it was
four. That's a fair round.
It was 4.9. We were gutting for 5. So technically we did not hit the goal. But that's the deal. And we did that by just leaning into our strength. And when you need a market turnaround, you need to lean into that strength that aligns with what your customer is looking for. It's really about this, you know, in the SaaS and tech world, I'm bringing up these examples because they're outside of SaaS and tech. They're before focused on SaaS and tech. But everyone's looking for product market fit, but we've never really broken down what that means, right? Both of these examples, we were able to talk about the problems in the industry, which was, you know, like in the boating space, it's just you get to buy one off floor and it's never exactly what you want, right? In the motorcycle space, it's, you know, it's difficult to get a deal. And even if you do, a lot of times when you get it, it's not exactly what you thought. So we worked on offer market fit, which is having an offer that stops people and converts at a high level, and then message market match. How do we evangelize this? Where are we putting it? In what channel? With what message? With what click-through rate and conversion rate? When you have those two things right, you have something worth marketing. But a lot of times we don't spend enough time on the bare bones of what we're actually marketing. We're only just focusing on marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's one of my favorite things about the approach that I've seen here at Lean Labs in general, is that it we do always, when we start with working with a new client, right? We like to dig deep at the very beginning to check out those foundations, see what needs to be set or changed before, like you said, we just start, you know, go, 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 hit the more button. I mean, obviously these examples are fantastic. You got some incredible results for these brands. But as you mentioned, you know, they're B2C, they're a little different, right? It's not quite in the tech and SaaS space.
Let's go SaaS and tech. Let's see what we can do.
Right? Let's get back to our bread and butter.
All right, cool. So let's talk about what's happening now and what happens with some of our clients and things that might be relevant to you listening, right? So inside of the SaaS and tech space, there is, if you've not read Crossing the Chasm, that's like a must-read book. It's prerequisite to growing a company that you want to scale. And it talks about the bell curve of adoption, right? So there's an adoption curve. And what I see in the tech and SaaS space is companies, especially if they're not brand new, they're not paying attention to the market adoption curve for their industry, right? And what happens is they're like, well, we were selling so well 3 years ago or 5 years ago, and this was working awesome. So it's kind of like turn to Kevin, make it work again. Okay. And if this is a pattern that I have definitely seen, it definitely is. And sometimes what's happening is that underneath the surface, the market adoption is changing. So if you think about it, when you're new into a space, right? So like, let's take it what kind of software do we want to take as an example? CRM software. When CRM software first came into space, right? Just learning that there's a way to do that with like ACT or ACT-ON software was interesting. And they shipped you a CD-ROM to your house and you installed it and you ran your CRM on your computer locally, right? And if you wanted to have that on another computer, you needed to put that CD-ROM in that computer and install it. And then, you know, from a market adoption curve, like people that were really interested in that, you know, grabbed that software. I'm old enough that I did that. And installed it. But what happens is those are the early innovators. Those are the early majorities. Those are the ones that help the industry hit critical mass because they've been thinking about it. Some of them even made their own homegrown solutions for this. But as it grows and expands, and you from first early adopters to an early majority, right? The people that, you know, they don't even know if they really need a CRM. They haven't really heard about it. They didn't go seeking it out, right? What they tend to be looking for is something that hits more boxes than it's the thing I've been asking for my whole life, right? So like, if you think about that in the cybersecurity space, there's some people who inside of their company, when it was first being formed, they were thinking about security because they're wired for it, right? And those are your innovators and early adopters, right? But then when those people all have a security solution, you got to go move into the early majority. They're going to go, what's proven? Right? Because they're more resistant. Why do I need to spend this money? Why do I need to have these team members, tech members, new processes, new expenses? I'm not sold. I need to know something that's proven. Right? And then as those people buy a proven solution, now there's people who still have put it off. Right? And that's generally considered, instead of the early majority, that's the late majority. And they want to know what's popular. Like, I don't want to have to think about this. It needs to be proven. It needs to be popular. It needs to be easy. Right? And what happens is what they're looking for changes. So what happens is you need to understand what is the level of adoption inside of your ideal in the space that you serve. Because even after that, when there's someone like, oh, I want something that's proven, I want something that's popular. Well, the final companies, which is certainly the state now, if you're going to existing companies that don't have a cybersecurity solution in place, right? That's a laggard. They've been putting this off for as long as humanly possible. They're not actually interested in it. They feel forced to it. So maybe there's a level of legal compliance, like a regulation that they have to behold to. Okay, I'll do it for that. Our company has gotten to that size. But otherwise, I wouldn't have, right? They generally feel forced into it. Or they had a breach. They had an issue. They put it off forever. Well, what are they most motivated by? Price. Price, ease, simplicity, because they never wanted it in the first place. What often is happening with SaaS and tech brands is we've shifted from those innovators to the early majority. What they're looking for has changed. The requirements have gone up. They have a level of proof that they're looking for you to demonstrate exactly how you have solved their needs and goals for their brands and made it easy. They're looking for what's popular. So while you work as a niche player, you're not being seen on the top review sites. They're disqualifying those because they don't want to be the guinea pig, right? You know, with a lesser known brand. So you have to understand what's happening in the mind of the buyer today that maybe wasn't there a few years ago, right? Like if you look at HubSpot's adoption curve, for example, you know, when they first got started, they were really focusing on inbound, right? And for people that were already doing that, it was a natural switch to come over and do it on HubSpot. But that was just a few people, right? Just those that were doing blog content, doing SEO pages, doing landing pages. They were early to the game. But as they grew, they had to actually change their positioning to reach the broader and broader audience that was not yet doing it. Okay. And then once they were all doing it and they have massive competitors doing it, they had to change their positioning yet again to all on one platform where whether you're doing inbound or you're doing outbound or you're doing, you know, RevOps, whatever your approach is to driving that new revenue, you can do it on a HubSpot. And that's them paying attention to what is the level of maturity of their market. What is the, where are they at the adoption curve? And now they roll out HubSpot Free and HubSpot Starter. Why? Because we're into laggards. And like oftentimes a turnaround comes from paying attention to this. So I had a client who was in the VR space. That one I mentioned where I did 14 interviews in 7 hours plus a lunch. I did it with a VR mask on in VR. And by the way, trying to take notes with a VR mask on, that totally did not work.
Ian.
While talking to people, I got quite dizzy because I'm wearing a VR mask, trying to peek out of it, write down notes as I go. But they wanted me to experience what it was like to be, you know, talking with customers in VR, which was really interesting and fun. But what we realized is that what the interests of those earliest adopters in VR were not interested in the path of the company. Like the path of the company's interest did not align with the community that they had been attracting. And they were wondering why some things weren't taking place. And that's because literally their bottom end motivations were different. So it kind of comes back to the exact same thing, right? You have to have a deep understanding of what your target customer is thinking and feeling, what they want to see, what they need to hear, and then to align that. They actually pivoted their company into taking one of the most valuable components of their technology and spinning it off and, you know, being looked at by Clubhouse and Netflix and some really large companies to leverage the technology they had built, because they're like, we're early for the VR model that we want. So ultimately that was a, you know, failure, just like it was with the boat company, right? We're going to shut this down so that we can say yes to something else. And a lot of times that feels hard because we're going back on some prior decisions and goals, but that's what a marketing turnaround looks like, is we have to say no to something that's not working to say yes, to find what is, you know? And that's generally the process. And we've done this with other companies, normally because of market adoption. And if I can bring you one more real briefly.
Absolutely.
It's kind of fun. We're just laying it out there. But Lean Labs is going through a little bit of this right now itself. Because if you think about it, if you're a SaaS and tech company and you're hiring someone to help you with marketing for the first time, if you're not a startup, why you been putting that off so long? It's 2024, right? So like what happens is companies coming in, doing marketing and just getting started with it in 2024. Now, if you're a funded startup, you have a new product coming to market, that makes total sense, right? But if you're doing this and you don't have any marketing people, right? Or you have one marketing person and you've never invested further, or you've tried a marketing agency or two, but then you stopped for 3 years, right? There is a, which is pretty common, by the way. What's happening is this shows the adoption curve of SaaS and tech companies doing marketing, which is virtually all of them are, right? And when your competitors are spending 5 or 10 times as much on marketing and they have their systems in place, and you're trying to come in as late majority, possibly laggard, going, hey, how do I do this on the cheap? But I want to outgrow them. That's a very difficult ask to me. Well, how am I supposed to win? I have less bullets and we're like years late to the war, right? So that's the deal. And for us, we're like, where's the growth center? Right. And the growth sectors are obviously AI. Right. We thought maybe some of my friends have moved into like marketing for crypto specifically. And then crypto kind of, you know, it's having this little pullback and regroup after,
let's say,
all over. Hiccup is a good word. We'll call it a hiccup. I don't know much about crypto. So our team are not crypto experts. So we never really pushed into that. Might have turned out to be convenient. But now we're like, do we need to push to AI only? Do we need to niche in even further to take where the early adopters are, where the early majority will be? Do you see how we're even applying that to our own business? Active conversations. Haven't talked to anybody about that since yesterday. And like, this is what you have to do to stay on top of your marketing is even in advance of seeing a significant decline. Pay attention to where you are in adoption curve and what's happening in your marketplace.
No, I have one question that kind of applies to any of the SaaS and tech examples. How long on average do you find it takes to start seeing some of that momentum build when you're doing a turnaround with a client?
Right. So sadly, the answer is it depends. But yeah. Can we break it into some smaller pieces? All right. So when it goes to talking to the market, talking to current customers, talking to recent customers, talking to past customers, talking to didn't buy buyers, you can do that in 10 days. Like you can do it in 10 days. You can do it in 5, right? 10's a little bit more reasonable. Asking people to stop what they're doing and meet with you this week, it's a little bit hard, okay? But hey, could you meet with me next week? Man, that's actually met with, people tend to respond well when you want their opinion. Just ask them for help and they tend to say yes. That's what I do. I don't try to make it some marketing expert email. I just say, hey, I would really love your help. If you had 15 to 20 minutes, it would really help me. I used it again to understand what you're thinking and feeling around these things. And the response rate to the non-scaled email is quite high. To that corporate email, yeah, it's pretty low. So that's the deal. You can do that in 10 days, right? Then you wanna align with your stakeholders around what you heard, and you wanna think about what you would wanna pilot. Well, you can pilot it by voice, calling a few people back in a few hours. But then when you know, depending on what that feedback is, what you need to do to try to find something that has a little bit of that magnetic message that makes people go, what? That's interesting. And the thing that I'm looking for is them to either say, that's right, or how much would that cost? Because those are the things, oh, that's right, that's what I want, or how much would that cost? Those are the signals that I'm talking about something that's interesting. And normally we want to do a few just customer development conversations before we even think about putting together a bit of a pilot. If the pilot goes well, Mallory takes all in maybe 8 weeks. If the pilot requires some iterations, some split testing against it to try variations to find something that really grabs them, it could take 3 or 4 or 5 months. So it kind of depends, but the steps are what's key. And you can get started and have a lot of insights in less than 10 days.
Yeah, well, I think that kind of takes us back to the boat example, right? Where it was, okay, maybe was it a little risky to try this repositioning during, you know, the busier season? Perhaps, but ultimately, you know, what's that old proverb? The best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago. The second best time is now. You know, better start as soon as you possibly can, as soon as you know there's a problem.
Yeah, and here'll be my call to action. What's the harm in talking to buyers, past buyers, potential buyers, and didn't buyers to understand exactly what's happening in the marketplace? What's the harm in zooming out to have a few conversations? I promise you're going to get more context than you have right now. Right, especially if things aren't going super well. All you can do is learn and probably make a few friends in the process. You know, that first step, even if you don't think you need a turnaround, man, it's going to help you dial in your messaging better. And then ultimately, let's let the answers decide the next step.
Yeah. Well, this has been super enlightening with all of these examples. I'm greedy. I want one last little bit of advice. So Kevin, what are some kind of key takeaways from your experience, maybe from these examples, from our conversation today? Anyone who's listening that's thinking, oh, my growth might need a bit of a turnaround.
Right. I would say the biggest thing is you just need to look at the performance of your marketing, right? And if you're doing things that kind of aren't working, you're below benchmarks, your marketing is flat to even not profitable, you probably don't want to do more of it. It's probably a good opportunity to pause and go, huh, let's reassess our positioning, right? Let's reassess our messaging. Let's reassess our offers. And I'm not saying that you have to go change everything, but let's at least do an assessment of them. Let's take a look at, you know, where is the market in the adoption curve and where is our positioning against our competitors? And as a plug, Mallory, I sold the schedule. Our next episode is about strategic repositioning.
Yes.
You're struggling with your marketing. Maybe that's one to listen to see what might apply to your company. There's some pretty good books, 4 Steps to an Epiphany, Running Lean at the Lean Startup. You know, we put Lean in Lean Labs because of books like those. There's a book called Value Proposition Design. These are great resources. To if you're interested in self-study on positioning, Those are great resources to start thinking about how to think and grow like a startup. And startups, they don't just market what their competitors have. They take a unique angle that stops people in their tracks and gets traction, right? So, you know, oftentimes that's a great way, even if you're quite an established business, to elevate your messaging and marketing for the target customer in the current level of adoption.
Amazing. This has been great. Thank you so much, Kevin, for all your insights, for sharing your experiences with us, and chatting through these case studies with me.
All right. Very good. At the end of the day, it's not just doing more of what's not working. It's finding that thing that works, even if you have to try 2 or 3 or 5 or 15 times. And honestly, even once you find that, you still have to pay attention to it over time. This game never stops because the market is evolving.
Right. Change is the only constant, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully our listeners can take these insights and use your experiences to start to identify their challenges and make some positive changes. Thank you out there, or everybody out there, for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes, especially our next episode, as Kevin teased, about brand positioning. So also take a second and rate and review the show if you haven't done so already on your favorite podcast application. It really helps us out. And until next time, this has been Growth Team Radio.
Want to grow your business? Trying to find the right path to do it? Well, we've got the answers. Go to stopscaling.com. Yes, you heard right. Go to stopscaling.com, where we'll show you the exact way to grow your business this year.